Picture this, 10,000 head of Rambouillet Merino sheep spending their days grazing in the crisp air of the Montana mountains, producing the finest wool in America. These rugged landscapes are our home and have been for four generations. Welcome to Duckworth Premium Merino Wool. Every garment is born from American soil and crafted with passion, pride, and precision. From the sheep grazing on our Montana ranch to the skilled craftsmen and women whose hands knit, sew, and spin every fiber that make up our products, our process is a collaboration of American ingenuity and dedication. With Duckworth Merino Wool, you're not just buying a garment, you're investing in a legacy. Our commitment to growing, spinning, knitting, and sewing our own garments right here in America ensures unparalleled quality with stewardship of the land at our core. And the best part? You can wear our products with pride, knowing that you're supporting local communities and American workers every step of the way. So if you're ready to experience the true essence of American craftsmanship, visit Duckworth.com today. Apparel for the outdoor enthusiast and everyday lifestyle alike. We believe there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. Check out Duckworth today. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. I hope you guys are all having a great day today. I want to remind you of a few things today before we get into the interview. I want to remind you of the intensive that's going to be coming up. Really looking forward to this. You've been hearing me talk about it a lot. I'm going to continue to talk about this May 16th through the 18th. I want you to join us in Eminence, Missouri. We're going to be spending 2 days on the Jack's Fork River and then also on Current River, two of the most beautiful rivers in the Midwest. We'd love for you to be there to canoe down those rivers with us and then also just enjoy really good teaching from A.D. Robles, Matt Reynolds, and my buddy Scott Tungay. So Matt Reynolds is going to be talking about a book. He actually is writing for Forbes magazine, and he's going to be talking about those leadership principles to us before that book actually releases. So you want to sign up for that. It's going to be a really great time. And then we're going to just spend some time doing some strongman competition and just other things that you might think are a little bit fun. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun with it. So please sign up for that. Also, just want to remind you of Jordan's podcast, the Fruitful and Fearless podcast. We're going to be doing some more recordings of those after having Oak. It's been a little bit of a season hitting stride, so that's why there's been a delay in some of those episodes. And then also the Sons and Slaves podcast with me and my boys. We're just having a lot of fun going through the book, Boyhood and Beyond. I want you to please check that out. And also want to mention and give a shout out to Duckworth. You've heard the ad, and this is what we're doing this month. We're talking about Duckworth products, and I've got this really cool powder hoodie on that I'm wearing right now that I love. Spent a lot of time in this thing already, and today I get to talk to a new friend of mine. Going to get to know him as you get to know him, my good buddy, the president of Duckworth, Daniel Mao. Daniel, how's it going, man?
Good, Jared. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. I tell you what, let's go ahead and pray. Let's start things off right, and then we'll get to know you a little bit.
Perfect.
Okay, Father, we just thank you for this time. I ask for blessing upon this conversation. Holy Spirit, I thank you for uniting Daniel and I as brothers, and we've never met before, but we get to talk about you, talk about life, family, being in the outdoors, business, and just and all sorts of things. So just guide this conversation, and I pray it be beneficial to those who are listening in, and I pray this would be an encouragement to him as well. We just thank you and praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
All right, brother, let me get this hat on real quick. Yeah. Just a second.
Jared, I got to ask, you talk about that intensive in some rivers. Are you guys fly fishing on those?
Me and a few other guys will be, and it's the upper parts of the river that are the better parts of the river fly fishing. Where we're at, there's smallmouth. There are a few trout where we're at, but the better parts of the river up in the about 50 miles north of where we are, or let's see, west of where we are upriver. But okay. We are going to be doing some fishing. Yeah, looking forward to it.
That's going to be awesome. So that's a big passion of mine. So when I hear rivers and trips like that, I got to ask if there's going to be fly rods in hand and chucking some big old streamers at some bass, it sounds like. So that's going to be super rad.
Heck yeah. You know, I just got into fly fishing this last year, and in Southern Illinois, there's a ton of lakes. There's no rivers. There's no clear, there's no rock bottom rivers. But in Missouri, when we go over there, man, it's beautiful. And they are, I mean, for Midwest rivers, I can't imagine. I mean, I've been out west, and I went to college in Appalachians, and pretty rivers there, man. The Hiawassee River, the Ocoee River, you can float that like whitewater float. But these two rivers are they're beautiful. And Jack's has some really good trout fishing. Like I said, up in different seasons, different parts of the year, better fishing. But man, it's a ton of fun. I've really enjoyed it, but just now getting into it.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do. I mean, we've got what they call the Blue Ribbon and trout streams of America right here in Montana, and we hammer those all season long. So I kind of, gosh, I moved out to Montana about 16 years ago and drove up the canyon towards Big Sky and Yellowstone National Park and just saw a bunch of people standing in waders and fog rolling around them. And I mean, it's just an art to watch these people do that. And after seeing this, like, I've got to teach myself how to do that. So I self-taught myself how to fly fish, which actually is a lot of my story. I self-taught myself a lot of different things. But yeah, I
Man,
love supporting
that's
people and hearing people get on waters and fly fishing. So that's cool that you're doing that with a group of guys.
oh heck yeah, man. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think we'll have some more guys fishing this year because I think when we get there the first day, it's a 3-day trip. This is our sixth annual trip, and I'm expecting about 60 to 75 guys this year, and it's fathers and sons and just men from all over. And the guys that I have coming in to speak this year are going to pull some guys that are interested in that content, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping the event grows to a couple hundred people eventually. And there may be some more fishing involved down the road, but that first day when we get there, we're going to be on the river. But it's interesting because I read A River Runs Through It, Norman McLean, years
Oh,
ago,
yeah.
and I'm haunted by the waters. You know, that last line of the book. It's just like I'm like haunted by that last line, and always wanted to do that. I've loved the rivers. I've just, you know, just really enjoy that. And so getting into fly fishing on lakes, it's not the same as getting out in waders and getting in the river, but it's still fun. But I had to self-teach. I self-taught my the hunting life that I've enjoyed now for the last 5 years. I had to teach myself how to hunt with I actually did have a mentor, but okay, well, let's back up a little bit. So Daniel, let's just go ahead and get to know you a little bit. Tell us about yourself and then your family and then what it is that you do.
Yeah, gosh, it's hard to understand like where to start when you start talking about yourself and giving people a background. But the place that I typically start is just my faith journey, and it's been a what I would say kind of a rocky road of sorts. But that's okay. I think that's what Jesus calls to us to is not shying away from the challenges that exist in attempting to follow Him. So, I mean, dating back to when I was born, it was a Christian family. That's how I was raised in the Midwest. And I mean, through all of that, you know who Jesus is, you know who God is, you know all the traditions of the church. But it took me a long time to figure out if I actually knew Jesus, right? And there's some nuance within that word of know and knew. There's that mind part of it, but then there's also the heart part of it. So I go through most of my life knowing who Jesus is. I get out of high school, I go to college, and I kind of go do my own thing, which included a ton of partying, and really engaged that lifestyle for about 10 years. And it took a DUI. And I'm one of those people who's pretty transparent. It took a DUI for my eyes to really be open that I'm not following Jesus. And, you know, there's a passage in Deuteronomy, I believe, with Moses where he says, I put before you life or death, and it's yours to choose. So as I was sitting in a jail, a detention center, essentially, like those verses just kept ringing through my mind of, do you want to choose life or do you want to choose death? And I decided to choose life at that point. And that was at, I think, 28 years old at that point. And ever since then, it's just been a journey of really trying to figure out what it looks like to follow Jesus in all aspects of life. And I think part of my church background initially was, you know, there's this idea that we want people to know Jesus. But I don't know that we really develop the desire to walk with people through the difficult parts of life to actually get to Jesus. So I wanted to do that differently and do that well. And that includes business context, just life on life context, being around tables with people and eating with them and reading scripture at this point. But at a lot of that journey, it took me to seminary as well to try to
Oh, really?
figure out how to mesh my faith with the responsibility of being a human on this planet and trying to figure out how to follow Jesus well through all of that. So, yeah, and two, with all of that, I've had a massive passion for the business world. I graduated in 2013 with degrees in accounting, finance, a master's in accounting, really with the desire to go into small business world and climb the ladder. Like that was my initial intent, and make as much money for myself. But when you follow Jesus, a lot of these things start to fall by the wayside. Like, money's not important, but what is important at this point for myself is that eternal ROI, if you will, mm-hmm. and try to pursue that for myself, but also help others pursue mm-hmm. that. So I think that seminary journey helped in some ways to try to figure out how to mesh faith and real life, because mm-hmm. life is very real and full of challenges.
Yeah. So seminary then. So what was your discipline in seminary? Like, did you get an MDiv? I mean, were you pursuing pastoral ministry or?
I started with the pursuit of MDiv and mm-hmm. was doing that online, which is super challenging. I would imagine you probably went to seminary, have some experience there too, but my gosh, doing seminary classes online is super challenging. But I was also doing that while working full time. So it became a bit of a burden to try to pursue that heavy of a degree. And I shifted to a master's of biblical and theological studies. And I finished last April, so about a year ago, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, well done. So where was that? What school?
Western Seminary, which is
Western
based
Seminary,
out of Portland. Yeah.
Okay. I've heard of Western Seminary. Okay. Yeah, very cool. So then now are you pursuing, like, are you an elder at the local church? Have you felt that internal call into ministry or what specifically are you doing with that?
So I did at one point. So I started seminary with a desire to go into what we call vocational ministry. But about 3 years ago, God really started to just press on my heart that that's not where I want you. I want you to stay in the business environment, the workplace environment, and trying to help other people figure out what it means to be followers of Jesus in those sorts of spaces.
Yeah,
and
that's good.
I think if we look on a typical Sunday morning in a church, we have so many people that come from all aspects of life, and they sit in these pews or chairs or in circles, whatever a church might look like. And we have to understand that most of these people are coming from that workplace. Most of them are coming from a hospital. Some of them might be a teacher. Some of them might be CEOs or presidents. Some of them might be sowers. But each one of them has a purpose that God has called them to. And if we can figure out how to put those people on mission in those contexts, I have this belief that we could see incredible change throughout the world and in our country and local communities. So that's really where my heart is started to navigate more towards, is one, figuring out how to navigate the business world specifically as a Christian, but helping other people do the same.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. Married, kids, that on I'm the married. Horizon, or you are married?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. I got married last July.
Okay. Congratulations.
Big year with graduating seminary and getting married. And that's been a huge joy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Very cool.
I was actually one of those people who never really had much of a desire to be married. And again, a lot of that comes from my own kind of experiences within Christian circles. And there just seems to be so much pressure put on marriage. It's like to the point where I've heard and felt myself, like a lot of single people, not feeling a part of the church. So I just didn't put a ton of pressure on getting married, because I wanted to showcase in some way that being single and a part of God's church is a perfectly good path for folks. But now that I am married, it's awesome. Love my wife. She's phenomenal. Just provides a ton of strength and courage to myself to go do what God is asking us to do.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, glad that God brought her into your life. Very cool. And so July, what? Me and my wife got married July the 24th.
July 14.
July 14. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay.
We kind of have a funny joke that, we celebrate our anniversary every month and tell people it's our first anniversary or our seventh anniversary, and it works. So for those out there, don't forget the monthly anniversaries.
Yeah, there you go. Very cool. So let's back up a little bit then. You grew up in the Midwest and now you're in Montana. So how'd you end up being in Montana?
Oh, man. Most of it was like, it started from my desire to leave my parents at the end of the day and kind of chart my own course. So I had started a college degree at a small local Christian college there that they have a lot of people from the Montana area go there as well. So I had a couple of really good buddies, and I actually hopped on a phone with one of their parents and said, "Hey, I want to come to Montana. Can I stay with you?" And they said, "Absolutely." So I packed up my car in May of 2008, I guess, at this point, and made the 1,000-mile trek by myself to Montana. and
Wild.
Never left.
Never
So,
left. Okay.
Yeah, it was quite a journey.
Okay, so then you did all the schooling then, and then, okay, let's talk business world, vocation. How did you end up with Duckworth?
So I started my career in public accounting, doing a lot of tax and audit work. I kind of got burnt out doing that because most of that career, you're sitting behind a computer screen, or this was my experience with it, just plugging numbers into a program, and it kicks out some numbers for you. And it was my desire to be able to have more impact on business and make decisions, really step into a more, the term we use, leadership type role. So I navigated out of the business world, or the accounting world rather, into a really small business back in 2017. It's actually started by a buddy of mine. I had no desire to move out of the accounting field at that point, but he continued to pursue me. I think he talked to me three different times to go do that. And that actually reminded me of the conversation with Peter and Jesus. You know, there's three times you're going to deny me. Jesus restores him three different times. So I kind of was playing off of that biblical interpretation there and decided to jump ship into a very small business as their director of operations and finance. I did that for a couple of years and then got super jaded in the business world and decided I'm going to go back and swing a hammer and do construction for a while and get some of the stress out. So I did that in Big Sky, Montana during one of our coldest winters. So that was pretty brutal when you're playing with steel frequently every morning and shoveling loads of snow. But my desire was, again, to always get back into the business world at some point. So this happened around 2020 and the COVID years. Went back into public accounting for a bit. I vowed that I was never going to go do that again, but it seemed like a pretty good step out of the cold construction field into a warm office. It was doing that, and I was actually angling to start a CFO for hire position with this accounting firm, and COVID hit and everything got shut down. Hiring got shut down. So I finished up the tax season there and then was unemployed for a few months, which is a really weird place to be as a person that had 3 degrees at that point and pursuing another degree. Yeah, so
it's tough.
It was weird, but it was also super beneficial. I got a lot of downtime to just reflect and focus on seminary at that point. And it was during that time where a position with Duckworth sprang up and I decided to throw my hat in the ring. And ended up getting hired about 2 weeks later after doing so. So it's been a long journey to get to Duckworth, but gosh, in some ways, a longer journey even at Duckworth with everything we've had to navigate from supply chain challenges and COVID and small team environments. And on top of doing that, trying to do that in America, where the textile industry has really been ravaged over the last 80 years.
Well, let's talk. Okay, here's where I want to go. I want to talk a little bit more about supply chain, about things being made, manufactured, sourced in America, what you're doing at Duckworth. And then I want to circle back to and talk a little bit about some fly fishing again. And at the very end, what I always do is just set you up to praise God for his grace. And I just ask you, Daniel, why do you love Jesus? And then you just go, you know, just whatever. And but I also want to talk a little bit about the business side of things too. So really four things, and I'm going to try to remember those four things. Okay. So let's think about sourcing, because a few years ago I got into Origin, and I worked with Origin and was able to do some stuff with them. I got some of their jeans. I'm actually going to be doing a review on their jeans and one of their hoodies here pretty soon. And I really started thinking that just the theology behind making and sourcing things locally. And what is that when it comes to the obligations we have to love your neighbor? And there's so much globalism. I'm actually reading a really interesting book right now by Peter Zahn about the collapse of globalism at this point. There is something there's a case to be made to say, you know, when companies said, we're not going to source, manufacture, make things here, and we're going to employ people in other countries, that's theological. That is a decision they're making, whether they realized it or not, that has implication on the neighbors that are around them and the obligations we have for those that are around us. So Let's just talk Duckworth. What, why the commitment to source things locally, to make things? Is it, I'm sure it could be a whole lot easier to go down to Mexico and get some, and not that that's necessarily the worst thing in the world to do. I mean, everybody does it. But why are you guys committed to doing things as a company the way you're doing them?
I think it's just the belief in the American people in some ways. And I say that as a broad stroke type statement there, but we do have a responsibility, I think, to our neighbors first, like you said. That, I mean, to tell more of the story or the background of Duckworth, it was founded by a sheep rancher who has about 10,000 head of sheep. And he just got tired of watching all of that wool go overseas and be blended in with the other wool that was produced in various countries, because it really devalues the work that him and his family had put in. So that's a big component of it as well. And I think we're all pretty well aware of the atrocities that happen overseas in some manufacturing environments. So there's a desire as well as an entity to push back against that. In doing so in a way where we are producing apparel that's going to last a long time. Again, I think most of us are probably aware of fast fashion and really what that means. I mean, so much of the product that people buy today, it might last for 6 months and then it ends up in a landfill. And with those products, again, when they're made of synthetic fibers like polyesters or nylons or spandex, those things don't break down. So not only do we have, I think, a theological responsibility to people, but a theological responsibility to creation that God has given us to steward and take care of. So when we look at a global industry that is producing billions of dollars worth of synthetic products that could be using some form of slave labor or has environmental impacts, like that, that's a big responsibility that I think as Christians we need to take seriously. And it was part of the reason I decided to join Duckworth as well. We're not set up as a quote unquote Christian company, but there are so many things that we do that have undertones of Christianity and being followers of Jesus, which is really exciting for me.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I think it is important, even thinking about synthetic materials that we put on our body. There's so many things that now we're discovering, things like with spandex, that, you know, there's so many things that are happening to the, like, the physiology of men and women in our country, from big pharma to plastics to just even the clothes that we're putting on our body. To be able to get a wool shirt, something, you know, where it came from, that's going to last, for me, it's like, man, that kind of stuff's important. And it is important to know, like, there's people up in Montana right now that are actually, you know, putting all this together and doing the hard work, from taking, you know, wool that's sheared from these sheep, from this dude that has owned this farm for multiple generations, who didn't want to just ship it and make as much money as he possibly could, as fast as he could with it, but wanted to put the hard work into it. And so, I mean, honestly, I love what Duckworth doing, and the aesthetic of what you guys are doing as well. From, I mean, your Instagram game is great, and your website, and just all the appeal of it. It's like, it does a really good job drawing people in. But then when I actually, like, got the stuff, I'm like, man, this is great. I love it.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. And I've always loved wool, because I started getting into, like, vintage Woolrich and Pendleton stuff, you know, Pendleton up in Pendleton, Oregon. And the quality of you get soaking wet and you stay warm. I mean, it's remarkable. Right. It's really cool stuff. So it's not a Christian company, but you are a Christian, and you have, you know, as a role there, you have quite a bit of power, and we need Christians that run to power, not for selfish motivation, but for godly motivation. And we want Christians that run to authority, not away from authority. So you have people that work for you, and then I'm assuming people you work alongside with, and then people above you. So how is it? I mean, this is your pitch. You got pastors listening in. You got a lot of Christians listening in. We need Christians that crush it in the business world. I fully agree with you. We need some of the best of our, you know, people in the church that don't just immediately think, oh, I need to be a pastor. And maybe, but maybe you just need to go make a lot of money for the glory of God and for the good of his people and for those around you. Not so you can just, how I said it recently, is not so you can just build bigger barns just to fold your arms and say, look what I accomplished. But to say, I know exactly who's those resources are going to be. I've made a lot of money, and I know exactly who it's going to be. It's going to be for my family. It's going to be for my generations. It's going to be for my church. It's going to be for the people around me. It's going to be for the good of those that are in my sphere and circles. So, you know, here's your pitch. Like, why is it important for guys like yourself to be, and how do you function well at a company like Duckworth with it? That's not explicitly, hey, you know, we have, you know, the Ten Commandments on the wall, and we, you know, have prayer every single morning before we get here, and then as we go. So how do you do well in that role, and how would you encourage others to do what God has called them to do in their roles?
That's a fantastic question, Jared. And man, I wish I could sit here and tell people that I crush it every day as a Christian in the business workspace, but I don't think that's true, and that's okay. So I think one of the ways that I would define like crushing it is actually having a heart of humility. And like, if you make a mistake, go own it. I tell people pretty frequently, the employees at least, like if I do something wrong, I'm going to go own that with them, and I'm going to apologize and lead differently. Cause I think we can get into this place where we have a position of power and think we're immune to whatever it is. And then we start to use it, like you said, for selfish purposes. And I just don't find that to be the way of Jesus at all. So really taking on that humility that comes straight from Philippians 2, I think we need to take that seriously in a business context. And it's something that I do as much as possible to say, I'm going to lower myself actually below everybody to try to understand what they need. Where are they hurting? What wants do they have? What would make them better? How can I equip them with something else to bring them to a state of flourishing, and really understand that and do my best to make that happen for them? But on the other side, you still have to balance the needs of a business. You know, we have to make profit. Every business has to make profit. So you can't just go do whatever you want and raise wages to insurmountable places that put a detriment on the business. You have to be able to balance both of those, and it's not easy. So I think one of the things that we have to learn to do is really bring other people, other Christians into that, to ask questions of how do we do this as a follower of Jesus and make the biggest impact for his kingdom here. In another tangible way that I do it, I mean, coming into this conversation, just praying. I find myself frequently throughout the day with very small tasks, just asking God for wisdom. And again, I think that comes from trying to build a heart of humility, which is understanding I don't have all the answers, and that's okay. So leaning on God's wisdom is paramount for me as a Christian in the business environment, to try to make the wisest and right decision that I can. Again, it's challenging. I mean, we live in a culture, specifically a business culture, that is after the pursuit of money. That is its primary objective. And I push back against that where I can and try to balance everything with, yes, we need to do that, but we also have people to take care of. You know, we have partners that we need to take care of throughout the supply chain. So being a Christian in the business world, it's a challenge, but it is totally worth it.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. This Sunday, I'm actually preaching in Luke 9. I'm preaching through Luke, the Gospel of Luke right now. And in Luke 9, you know, Jesus has been doing ministry with the apostles, giving them power and authority in the beginning of Luke 9 to cure diseases and preach the kingdom. And then about three quarters of the way through that chapter, after just a very little amount of time, the disciples are arguing not about how to care for those around them. They're not having a conversation about theology, not having a conversation about, you know, politics and arguing in that manner, but their arguments, it's over who's the greatest,
right?
it's like come on, guys, like we've been this is what you're arguing about, like, really? And then he shows the path of greatness, which is, you know, service, like a little child. And there is a unique path to greatness that looks different than the world's prescription to be great. And there still is greatness to pursue, but there is a path forward to it. And it comes from taking on responsibility, being willing to serve, and living in a different manner than other people live. And, okay. So, we talked business life a little bit. Guys, check out Duckworth. Follow the link in the show notes and check out that giveaway we're doing with, again, one of these powder hoodies. Great, great hoodie. And go and get some products that are going to last. I forgot what you said. What was it? The throwaway clothes. What was your terminology you said?
Fast fashion.
Fast fashion. That's right. Yeah. Forget quality over quantity, baby. Get some quality and throw away the quantity and get some stuff that's going to last, that you're going to be able to give to your kids and grandkids, kind of thing.
Yep.
Okay, so let's talk fishing again, because it's Montana, outdoor life. You fell in love with fishing. So did you not grow up fishing? Let's just talk fly fishing. Why do you love it so much? And what's so great about it? And why should guys get into it?
Oh, I did grow up fishing. It wasn't fly fishing. But my family, we would take a weekend or a week trip rather up to Minnesota once a year and just get after fishing for pike and walleye, bass, I mean, everything. So
I shot a bear in Minnesota 2 years ago. So I went up there and got to spend some time up there doing that. It was awesome.
Were you up in the Lake of the Woods area?
It was near Duluth. It was like right south of Duluth. And it was in like this no quota area for bear. You could just get a over the counter tag as many as you want. And I just got one online. I think it was like $230 is all it was. Dude. And it's pretty cool. It was a 2-year-old bear. So it wasn't that big of a bear, but we ate it, brought it home. All the kids liked it. It was cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. So yeah. Man, once I got to Montana and just saw the beauty of Montana, like it, once you're here, you get what I'm saying, but gosh, it's hard to describe the creation here. But there's just a sense of serenity when I get on the water and I get to disconnect from everything and go chase trout. I love chasing trout. I love trying to figure out what's around that next corner. I mean, so many people will go within a quarter mile of a bridge and I don't start fishing until a quarter mile in, so I can get beyond where everybody's at and get on this discovery and the adventure. Man, I remember one fishing excursion. I started in a little town called Manhattan on a Sunday afternoon and I just kept walking. I was so intrigued at what was around the next bend. And 5 hours later, I was in another town called Belgrade. Like,
man, that's
oh boy.
Awesome. Uh-oh.
Thankfully, I had a couple of friends that had a cabin in that area. So I was able to pop off and get on their land, make a phone call. So I didn't have to make the 5 mile trek back up the water to get my vehicle. But that's what I love about it is you can just get so lost in fly fishing specifically and have an opportunity to disconnect and in that way, reconnect with the God of creation. And we had a message yesterday at our church about rest and that really rings true. And fly fishing is one of those places where I can just rest. And it's so needed. I think we live again in a busy world. So trying to find those places of serenity, those places of rest is critical for our health.
I just to reference another book I just read, it's called Comfort Crisis and it came out a couple of years ago. And basically, have you read it?
I have not read it, but I've heard of it and it is on my list.
Yeah. Michael Easton or Eisen or something like that wrote it. I forget the name of the guy. I have it somewhere in here, but his, you know, basic premise is like, hey, we've gotten fat, lazy, and we don't have to work for anything. And we're not outside, we're inside. And that has psychological and physical effects on the human body. And whereas, you know, 100 years ago, even without, you know, before massive urbanization of cities, or 150 years ago or so, or maybe just everything that happened from industrialization forward. And he talked about, you know, just the fight for survival. I mean, what we had to deal with to just live was totally different than what we have to deal with to live today. And getting outdoors is one of his prescribed paths forward. You know, he comes from a non-Christian worldview and everything, but still, I mean, there's like laced with common grace, the book is. And you read it and he's like, man, you got to get outside. You got to do some things that cause you, I mean, like campaign some stuff. I mean, get out and go run a half marathon or something and do things that physically challenge you. And, you know, even things like get in a river and put that as a part of your life and make it a priority and watch what God does through that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's funny we say like, watch what God does through that. That's where my first date with my wife was. And that's where we got engaged. And again, this is a place where I wasn't really looking for that. But God worked through these really lovely places. And for me, it was a river. And gosh, I'm so grateful for that. And the way that he does that, really the whole redemption process for me starts on the river. You know, I'd go there back in the day during the party days and do what I did there. And now it's just that place to find rest. So it's, I mean, you can go down the line too with like all the theological implications of a river. You know, we're going to end up with a river flowing out of the new heavens and the new Jerusalem. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Like typify all of that now as we engage in fishing trips on rivers.
It's awesome. And, you know, the outdoors is something that's really is a multi-generational thing too.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is where I'd press you a little bit on a statement you said before about singleness, and we can have a healthy disagreement here maybe. I don't know. But, you know, celibacy is the gift. Singleness is the result. of celibacy, the man that's celibate. And one of the things, the first commands is this cultural mandate is bear fruit, multiply, man, take dominion, go, get after it. And so I'd encourage you, man, have kids. If Lord willing, God allows it, have babies, raise them in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord as God has called you to. And then you get to share those rivers with your children. So I just took my oldest son, Ransom, out this year into the woods. And it was one of the things. So like, bro, I grew up playing sports, like eat, drink, sleep, sports. That's it. Didn't grow out. And I did grow up kind of hanging out in the woods. My grandpa lived in the woods and he had like 100 something acres or 70 something. I forget. But this whole hunting piece, I had a guy at our church is like, hey, why don't you come out to hunt? I'd never thought about it. I mean, just, all right, I'll take my hunter safety course. And oh my gosh, I fell in love. I mean, I absolutely love it. And now it's such a thing where it's like, okay, I can share sports with my children. That's a fun thing. Like we're going to be limited in what sports we do just as a family, because it's not very, very high on our values as a family. But this hunting piece and being outdoors piece is something that you can share, and you can do this with your kids, your grandkids, and like, man, to introduce them to that kind of stuff. It's incredible. So I took him hunting this year for the first time, and it was awesome.
Did he get anything?
No, he didn't, man. So I got a crossbow for him, and he had about, I don't know, 5 or 6 shots that were decent shots, but it's that, you know, the buck fever that comes when you're shooting a buck. And I had that. I missed 2 really nice deer this year, really nice bucks this year I missed with my bow. And he just got that instead of just with a buck, he missed that with basically everything he saw. He just got jittery and nervous. And so we've got to practice this year and get that down to where he can have some more stability in a stand, because we shoot from a stand. And he'd been shooting from a table, which is, you know, basically like a long range shooting table, right, where you're so stable, there's no movements. Then when you're up in a stand and you're breathing and you don't have you don't have the sand, it's not sitting on a sandbag. It's you know, a whole lot more difficult. So we're going to do a lot more practice this year. That's the plan.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, all hunters have been in that position.
Oh, man. So do you hunt as well, or are you just on the rivers?
I do a little bit of hunting.
Okay.
That's taken a little bit of a backseat to fly fishing. And when I went to seminary and working full time again, I had to make some choices of what's going to fall by the wayside and decided I was going to stick with fly fishing. But I definitely want to get back into hunting. We have, I mean, elk, and everybody loves it. I still have nightmares of one elk that I had an opportunity to get. It was on the wrong side of a fence and just never came over.
Oh,
but
man.
We had it absolutely perfectly all day, and he just vanished on us. I mean, it was a beautiful 6x6, and
oh man,
he was there one moment and the next moment gone.
Oh gosh, man, that's wild. That backcountry hunting, I've been able to talk to a couple backcountry hunters recently. Yeah, Wayne Incott and his son Nathan are out in Oregon. They're connected with the bow rack or the bow shop out there, the bow rack. And to be out in big country like you're in, oh my gosh, man, one day that's just like, I want to take my kids when they're like 18 or 20 or something like that and do kind of like a rite of passage thing out there or something. But very cool. Love to come to Montana. Now you're in, is it Bozeman, Montana?
Yep, Bozeman.
Okay, gotcha. So I know of Bozeman. I know of Missoula. There's not much else in Montana that I know about.
No. It's kind of one of those hidden gems that's becoming more and more discovered. I will say, unfortunately, it was nice to be here almost by yourself. You get to hop on a river and you didn't see anyone for miles. And now all these little bridges that I used to go to have 5 people on them, but it's really exploded in growth. But for the most part, it's still a hidden gem out here, and I hope to keep it that way.
Yeah.
It's stunning.
So what you're saying is, anybody listening to this, whatever you do, don't move there.
Yes.
Okay. Got
I'll be as blunt as that. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. Noted.
But if you do, hit me up.
Yeah. There we go. Man, very cool. Well, hey, this has been a ton of fun, man. I think everybody's going to just enjoy just the conversation back and forth that we've had. I certainly have. Why don't you go ahead and tell people, and I've got all these links that are going to be in the show notes, but tell people about Duckworth and anything that you'd want to tell that you maybe didn't get to talk about yet. Go ahead and throw that in there, and then we'll get to the final question here in just a second.
Yeah. I think the thing that I'd share about Duckworth and just invite people into is, Jared, what you talked about of, I think the theology of clothing, I think we need to take that seriously, because for me, it comes out of the Imago Dei. So we take that seriously. We get the opportunity to grow wool on a ranch, and we get to know the people there. We get to go send that to the Carolinas, where we clean all of our wool and we spin our own yarns. And we get to know people on those floors, and we knit our own fabrics and know those people. And we cut and sew our own garments with partners in Minnesota and New Jersey. So it is a fully domestic supply chain, which we think is really important from both supporting American manufacturing, but for me personally, that theology that is at play here that we have mm-hmm. to take seriously, that is so rooted in the Imago Dei. Now, I was going to add too early in this conversation, as a one of the largest economies and a part of the G8, we are importing about $40 billion worth of textiles that is likely impacted by human trafficking. And as a person that is in the apparel space and the textile space, I'm just not okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are degrading the Imago Dei by supporting entities like that. And as Duckworth, we want to try to do things differently. And it's challenging. We need people to support it. We know it costs a little bit more than what you might buy from some other entities, but you're supporting something much bigger than just a company. I think you are truly supporting human dignity and human mm-hmm. flourishing across not just the United States, but the globe, as we kind of protest against fast fashion and human trafficking in the apparel space.
Yeah, man, that's good. And it's great stuff. I mean, you'll spend a little bit, but when you think about owning something for a very long time, I plan on having this sweater here. I took it out to a campsite. We had a Trail Life Troop campsite or camp out, and I was sitting around a campfire for like, I don't know, 8 hours or something like that. Slept in this thing, and I you don't wash it. It didn't hold the smell very much. I just put it in my closet here, and I've just been wearing it. It's just fine. I love it. Kept me warm. Yeah. So it's great.
You got the best product we make right there in the powder hoodie.
Oh, is it really? Yeah, okay.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, gotcha. Well, yeah, I love it. It's great. And it's the thickest, or it's not the thickest stuff. You have something that's a little bit thicker, don't you?
Even? Yeah, we do. It's a woven garment. So what you're wearing is what we call a knit garment, and then we have some woven products as well.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. But a lot of great products. I mean, you guys want to definitely check that out. Really cool stuff. Okay. So why don't you go ahead and tell us, Daniel Mao, why do you love Jesus, man?
I love Jesus because he's everything. I mean, I've shared a little bit on this podcast of my journey to knowing Jesus, and without being confronted with that life or death, I'm dead. But he's the one that pulled me out of all of that and set me on a different path. And he changes everything. He invites us into a life of transformation and sanctification that includes every aspect of our life. And I'm just so grateful for that, that he doesn't leave us to try to figure it out on our own after coming into right relationship with him. So I love Jesus because one, he saved me, two, he's constantly with me, and three, he's going to be there at the end and put all things right again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And amen. Very good stuff. Well, I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. Everybody, we've been talking to Daniel Mao. Appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Jared. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the Shepherd's Crook podcast. For more information, you can go to theshepherdscrook.co. Please consider leaving a rating or review on iTunes. And if you want to become a member of the Shepherd's Crook, please message me and we'll get you on the list. We hope you have a great rest of your day.